beta focus is also good, actually.
Start recording. Okay. 10:30. Here we go. Welcome, everybody, around the table and listening online to the second fourth Wabuk conversation, which is a series of different conversations that we have with the people participating in the fourth Wandering Arts Biennial. We bring six people around the table and we talk about topics that deal with their practices. And today we will be talking about walking and individual and collective storytelling. This is the voice of Luz. I work for Nadine. And around the table with me, we have Bruno De Wachter, Laurent Delhomme, Sherwin Kianersiagigi. We have Pierre-Philippe Hoffman and various artists with us. Just for the people who are listening, if you want to react, you can call the landline of Nadine. You can find it in the screen you are looking at. And somebody will take your call and your question will come to the table. There is also a pad that you see on the screen, and there you can write your questions at the bottom. We first take a tour around the table where all the people with me will introduce themselves. And then we have set three kind of topics, and I will be directing the conversation and timing. So, voilà. I give the word to Bruno.
And my artistic practice consists mainly of walking and writing, and I have a special interest in landscape and how we relate to it by walking through it with our body and our senses, and also how we relate to it with language, the image a place name can evoke or the stories we tell. And the landscape of my interest can be urban, suburban. It can be the countryside or it can be wild nature. And my most recent and still ongoing project is called Werner Lenz. It is a walk in Les Vosges in France in wintertime. And it has two book fragments as a starting point. One fragment is the beginning of the novel Lenz by Georg Büchner, which describes how in the winter of 1778, the mentally ill poet Jacob Lenz walked through Les Vosges to the village of Waldbach, where the priest Oberlin was based, who was known for curing mentally ill people. The second fragment comes from Of Walking on Ice by Werner Herzog. He describes a walk from Munich to Paris in December 1974, so also in wintertime. His friend Lotte Eisner, who was living in Paris, was ill, and he believed that if he made it to Paris on foot, she will make it. And strangely enough, on his way, he crossed Les Vosges along the same route as Lenz did 200 years earlier, and he was unaware of this coincidence. So I walked this route again several times over the course of a few years, and I invite people to walk, reflect, and create with me. And this already resulted in a third text in which I evoke the spirit of Werner Lenz. The project I did before that, for previous editions of WAP, was rather in a suburban environment. It was called Circling Around Without Taking Off. It was a series of walks around international airports, and there everybody could join. I didn't do the walk beforehand, but I just drew a circular line on the map, and I proposed a basic set of rules. I didn't act as a guide. Participants could focus on whatever they liked. And after the walk, we gathered again, and the end result was something like a map and a cadaver ski, but we will talk about that later.
Timing.
Thank you. Laurent, please.
So I am Laurent Delon, and what brought me here in the Wandering Arts Biennale is actually the theme of my artistic research. Namely, it's I'm studying the mountains in the relationship that we have to them as a Western society. I observe that it's an intense relationship that we see very present through images, through imaginations, through myth, through stories, through literature. And it's actually more present than we think. It's not often very conscious, but it is quite present. And so a lot of attention goes to these spaces of mountain, and we give, and this space is given a high positive value. So this is what I'm trying to study. The grounding of my practice is my own experience of the mountains, so the actual experiential experience, and for which I use my own intuition and empirical observation. And another part of my practice is a bit more theoretical, and I'm trying to analyze what are the projections that we as a Western society make upon the mountains. So I try to analyze and study the archetypes, the myth, all the values that are associated to being in the mountain. And I try to understand what is the system that gives this space such a value. And one of my hypotheses for my work is that this is the same system that also gives negative values to other spaces. So I started off being fascinated by the mountains, and now what I'm studying is the fascination itself for the mountain. And being put like this, it makes me look simultaneously at the two participants in this relationship, both the mountains and the people who are fascinated. And The media I am working on are mostly based on performances, as I come from a dance and performance background. And I also explore different medium, but they all come down at some point towards performance. So that's it.
Thank you. Shervin, welcome.
I am Shervin Kionersi-Hagribi. So if I want to formulate my practice very briefly, it is normally I use performances or actions to investigate the automatic gestures and behavior that we employ in our daily routines. And one of those is, for example, walking. I use walking as a practice and also use it as a method for unfolding stories. I use also walking as a studio space, and it has different levels. One, it is like the moment I start to think about a concept or an idea, and the next level is the moment of performativity, the moment of presentation, and the last level is the retreat, the moment that I feel like this project, the focus of the work or project is over. I also use work as a making work itself or as a performance. So I have different I examples here. I work along the beach with another artist and taking turn following in one another's footsteps and try to fit our footsteps in one another footmarks. Or another performance is again with another artist, I start to walk on the opposite side of the street and also the artist. And each time when we cross each other, we shake hands, holding our breath and say hi or hello to each other. Or like another performance, again with another artist, I started to walk as slowly as we could on the lines of the sidewalks. And in general, walking is for me, or in my work, is about the space, time, memory, smells, sound, place, and the most important one is about imagination and being alive.
Thanks. Pierre-Philippe, welcome.
Hello. Walking was still very present in even my early artistic process. When I was student, I kept on walking for my project as a photographer. And I might say in the beginning it was a kind of indirect process leading me to places I didn't know yet, and it was enough. But one thing was more and more important, I realized it was also and more and more a question of time, of making things very slowly, even in very common places, in banality. And little by little, or I should say step by step, walking took me more and more place in my work in a very organic way. It was the occasion to me to be more concentrated of what I met, what I was doing, what I saw, what I heard. So in the meantime, I wasn't wandering. I was really walking or even hiking. I didn't follow my instinct during these walks. It was the consequences of a methodic approach, a kind of conceptual decision. So I decided to choose my path in advance as a concept that would lead me to the experience of walking, or to help me making pictures, recording sounds, or else relate to landscape architecture, but also to the way people approach landscape and see things, for instance, in a very aesthetic way. So I would say this methodic approach redefined the relation between time and space for me. This was a really key word in my practice. For Portrait of Landscape, a work that I developed partly with Nadine in the previous one edition. The project lasted 8 years, and during this time I walked from the border of Switzerland to the center of it. So it was 2,700 kilometers. I did it all season, all year long. So that means I have all the season in my legs, I would say. And I forced myself to film after each kilometer. That means I have 2,700 films of 1 minute of what I saw, what I met. So that was one project leading me to a video installation, a huge installation, and also a book that is finally ready. And now, after the delivery of the book that happened in autumn, I found really tricky the situation with the COVID. I wanted to create, to be able to be more and more things, but that, from my home it was impossible, so I restart to walk every day. And I decided to make it from sunrise to sunset in a quite radical way during 7 weeks, from 1st of February until last Sunday. I forced myself not to use any smartphone or internet during the day, and no vehicle at all. That means no bike, no car, no tramway, no elevator between sunrise to sunset. And so that was for me the first time that walking really became the subject of my research, I would say. So that's it. That's where I am.
Thank you. Various artists, welcome.
I represent various artists. It's a collective of 24 imaginary artists. They're very diverse and they practice different disciplines. They collaborate with each other in all different ways of collaboration. Even sabotage, stealing from each other is a way of collaboration. They use walking or wandering as a tool. It's part of their tool set, like painting, sculpture, writing, composing, or even applying for subsidies. They have two different ways that they use wandering or walking. It's the conceptual way or the structural way. I'm going to give three short examples of each. The conceptual side is, for example, the sparkling walk. Sparkling walk was you gather a few people, you take a bottle of champagne, you open the bottle of champagne, and you crush the little metal cage that comes with the cork. You crush it, you put it on a map, and you look what it trajectory of it that corresponds with the map. Then you walk this traject and you drink the bottle of champagne. If you find a door open, you walk in and you talk to the people, a shop, a gallery, or even a private place. If your bottle is empty, you buy a new one in a night shop or in a shop and you continue your walk till the traject is done. Then you have going home and to work is a piece that you go from home to your work if you live in the, if both are in the same commune, and you take a different road till you have done all the possible streets at least once, each side at least once. So it takes you a lot of time to map the commune with going to work and going home. The third one, last one, is the barrage walk. Barrage walk is imagine in every city that you would, with a river, that you put a dam and you flood the city. And so you walk along the water of the lake, that artificial lake. So you trace the new zero for the city. Then you have the structural walks. The structural walks is, the conceptual walks are always done by a few various in duo or in a triplet. The structural walks are done in group. That's a way to take the whole group on a trip or on a location. So the main one is called Camino Welt. Camino Welt is a reversed pilgrimage from Santiago de Compostela to Ostende. It's reversed in direction. It's part in 40 chapters, 40 weeks of walking. But it's also reversed in purpose. It's not to empty yourself and to come to arrive at the holy place as a new person. It's the opposite. You go back to Ostend and you become a commercial artist. You load yourself with everything that is wrong with the art market. So it's a very, it's almost a satanic walk. And then the last one is a walk that is not even moving. It's the whole group goes into in a hotel room. It's called Fauberge, but it has the same kind of practice as the structural walk. You take the whole group in a hotel room and you let them wander in the room. Not physically, but in their mind. So a little bit about how they work. So they see it as a tool. It's not like main practice. It's just it's a helping tool.
Okay. Thank you. So for this conversation, we had Sherwin propose a kind of structure that we will follow, and it's three questions: what happens before walking, what happens during walking or the walk, and what happens after walking. So we tackle each question one by one. So the first one, what happens before walking, I let it, leave it to the group. If somebody has a first reaction on that question, please do so.
No. Yes, but go ahead.
Oh, but very, it's a quick sentence, but first of all, before going outside, I negotiate with my entourage the right of freedom, because I have to say to them, to my daughter, my son, but he's really young, or to my family, I will be unreachable for several days or for 15 hours, or don't try to contact me, because you won't succeed in this. And this is a hard negotiation. Maybe you know this also, but that's something I wanted to say. That's the first thing.
Yeah, and for me, what I want to say is that even if you don't actually do something beforehand, there is always an imagination beforehand. You cannot prevent from having some imagination of what will come during the walk. And what for me triggers a lot of imagination is the map. And maps and place names as well on the map. And actually in the Circling Around project, this was my starting point. Sorry, we are a bit interrupted here by people who want to come in, but what was I saying? Yeah, place names. They sometimes evoke a whole world for me, and it's like when you're gonna meet somebody you never met, but you know the name sometimes already opens up a whole world. And then sometimes usually this world, once you meet this person or once you are on this place, is very different from what you imagined. This is always something happens always between this imagination and what you imagined, based on the name or the map. And then sometimes, weirdly enough, there is a kind of that's maybe even more weird when reality matches imagination. That's the most troubling, I think. Last summer I was walking through France and I stayed in a village called Chantecoq, and we camped on a playground there, and the whole night there were like five cocks in the garden next to us, and we couldn't sleep at all because they were singing. What do they do? They don't sing, but they kept us from sleeping. So then you really wonder what was first, the cock or the name. So you always imagine things beforehand.
Okay.
What happens from what I notice that is also quite present before taking a walk or taking a hike is the notion of having an objective. And like a direction to end the walk in, or a highest point you want to reach, or something you want to reach, and then the thing you start your walk with is the story of a successful story of you reaching the point, and it works as a story where you are already, you imagine yourself already arriving and how pleasant it must be. And then this story is accompanying you or accompanying me as I walk, and is kind of giving the motor to push further if it's becoming difficult, or to make the right decisions. And so it's like of a mother story that guides me beforehand through until the summit, until I reach my objective. And what is also interesting in this mother story is that if, for instance, for any reason, you fail in reaching your objective, it's again through storytelling of your own, in your own person, in your own voice, that you give the reasons why it was not possible to succeed. And then you you tell your own story in a way that allows you to fail or that just diverges from the original objective. And this is all happening in your own imagination, in your own private storytelling that is going on in your head.
And beforehand.
Beforehand,
yeah,
or while you do it and while you fail, it's
exactly.
Also happening at the same time. But then it's what I find interesting is in this is that it's at a level of self-storytelling that you motorize your hike or your walk through the process.
Because when you talk about reaching your objective, your final goal, you mean the physical one reaching
yes.
the top, but also or fulfilling this the path. I mean the.
It can be whichever
can be
goal
both.
You set yourself. If
yeah.
you can be reaching a destination, or if
yeah.
you can be reaching a summit,
yeah.
You start with this. You have this story where you succeed. And whichever diversion you take from this successful story, you also start
yeah.
to narrate it to yourself with a diverging story. And I find it's interesting that you have, whichever path you take, you narrate it to yourself
yeah.
as a way to justify or to allow yourself to go in a different direction.
I think it connects to what we said on Monday when we were preparing to set the engagement of the walking beforehand, that is something
yes.
that we do.
Yeah, and I was thinking a lot about this because, like before walking, it happened a lot of things. But in my practice, because most of the walking I do is in public space, and it is no control in public space.
Mm-hmm.
So at the beginning, when I started to do these small actions, I failed a couple of times because. Yeah, as this imagination, it was not. Even that was difficult to explain what was failed, but I just felt that it's something is wrong. So I started to practice before working to set up some rules, some structure.
Yeah.
And then, or to say it. Yeah, like to write a kind of a score, something like that. And then I had this kind of idea to give a kind of direction. Even in public space, it's very difficult to control the direction. But normally what I do is just set up
yeah.
some rules and structures and then I start with that. But sometimes it's out of hand and that makes it more interesting.
Because then the objective becomes to fulfill the rules rather
yes.
than setting out an ideal scenario, which
yeah.
is
exactly.
difficult to have in a public space. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What does Various do beforehand?
For example, for the Camino World, I start up with a spreadsheet. First column is the budget. Try
like
to find
score.
Money because it's... then the right outfit, because in the Camino world they start in white and they end in Santiago Compostela they start in dressed white and they end up in black in Ostende. So in the 40 weeks, the 40 chapters, they change from white to black, but according to the Carandache shade. You have a box of Carandache color pencils of 120, so you put them in gray value, so you have always three different colors that you can combine, and you make a costume of this. So it gets darker to the end. So that's a kind of like a big preparation, because you have to go into a shop with your pencils and try to find, can I take it outside, to find the right match. It's a bit of a tricky thing. Then you book the hotels because they are quite snobbish. They don't do tents. And you have to cross the distance, quite a distance in 7 days. So it's sometimes difficult to find a hotel. This is the preparation.
Yeah, okay.
And you have to fill two big suitcases with stuff because they all need stuff. If you wonder if they walk with the suitcases, no, they don't. It's always a taxi that brings them from one hotel to the other. So they walk light. But when they come in the room, they have this whole stuff to dress up and to act. Because, of course, in the room, they do the Fauberge thing, where they do the role play. And one of the role plays is Romeo and Juliet, for example. So.
Yeah. I think this is all what everybody said is an individual preparation, let's say, before walking. But are there experiences with that you have to inform a public beforehand that you want to take with, and how to do that? Because you have to transfer a certain imagination. Like if you take somebody else on a walk, what is that? Or
can I start now?
Yeah.
Yes. First, we make a kind of Instagram story about it, and that people can follow. But also, we try to contact as many much artists on the road, on the path, because we want to change. They want to change work with other artists, because on the walk they produce work as much as possible. That's why it becomes like an art market thing. And they try
to.
You're
talking about the Camino.
Yeah, they try to convince artists to swap artwork, so make like a collection of Camino World of artists on the road.
So beforehand, you then.
Oh yeah, you try to contact them,
yeah,
and say I will pass
work
by that day. Can I drop in? Or,
yeah.
Yeah.
But for you, it's a whole group of people that sometimes.
Well, and for the Werner Lenz walk, there are the two book fragments that are the starting point. So everybody who joins does the walk already twice before doing the actual walk, but twice, I mean, in imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And there, now recently this winter, because I had to cancel two times because of COVID, I took the time to make a Werner Lenz do-it-yourself guide so that people can go without me. But I found it a bit hard to do because I had to write a lot of practicalities on how to organize the walk and so on and so on. And I'm afraid that being busy with all this would deviate the attention from what, for me, the walk is about. So the advantage is if I've done it already many times, so now actually only two times. But if they go with me, they don't have to think about that, and they can concentrate on the book fragments beforehand, and then during the walk on the contrast between, on other things, but not on the searching the way, where are we going to sleep, which time are we going to take the train, and so on. So
that's your job then.
Yeah, and I do this just exactly to and for me. The first time it was also a bit of a hassle, but then you know things, and it becomes something that goes easy. But to write this down all was, yeah, a bit difficult. Because I thought, yeah, that's actually not what the project is about.
Ah, yeah, exactly. I was just about to say, then you lose the objective of what you
yeah,
want.
Yeah, it's different when you can also include this in the project, of course, this whole preparation. But for me, because it starts from book fragments, where it's a bit, it's not really strongly connected to daily reality, it's a bit, so, well, I don't know.
Which is a beautiful preparation for a walk. Mm-hmm.
What I find interesting by various artists in Bruno, and in my work also, and maybe others, is the fact that what needs preparation is the non-walking thing.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
having an hotel, getting to a starting point, or getting back to rest, or making a rendezvous, it's not
negotiation.
Yeah, walking is no preparation. You need just to choose the good
the
clothes, the route. But that's the most
the physical.
Yeah,
I prepare a little bit of physical thing. 2 months before I start walking on the treadmill, because if you have to walk 50 kilometers in a day, and you're not prepared, So. Physical thing, the feet also,
but walking
in the shoes. Huh?
But I say mentally,
yeah.
and maybe what would be associated as stress,
yeah,
maybe. The stress thing is the organization around walking.
Mm-hmm.
It's not walking. What about the weather? The weather will decide, and will be did you eat enough? That are the main questions.
Yeah.
But after the rest is
But I thought in my practice, I don't know if I'm right, that I prepare the walking itself.
Yeah.
Because like I make rules, like you walk, that I try to walk on one line or in a certain way.
Yeah.
Or
but that's less like stress. It's like
that's a natural thought that it's part of your job as an artist to reflect and so it's a quite... it's quite a decision, I would say.
Yeah.
But the rest is, did I check and do I need this document and where will be the bus and is it really the bus stop here or is it there or will the people find the way? Or that's the most fun.
Yeah, maybe setting the best conditions for the walking or even the school.
It's logistic.
So you have that possible.
Yeah, so it's basically more about practicality.
Yeah. I guess organizing a taxi, bringing stuff from one hotel to another is something that...
But then the walk, of course, brings you back to where you have to be.
Yeah, truly. Otherwise, we would stay in the taxi.
But for the circling around walk, I had another kind of preparation to do because there we followed the exact time of the sun. So we changed our clock a few times during the walk, depending on whether we were going east or west. And so this was a whole calculation I had to do beforehand. First calculating the exact solar time at the departure and then at the most eastern and most western point of the walk.
This is the same for various. We have to do the tide calculation, so the tides, because the whole walk goes along the coast, because it's a non-map walk. You just keep the sea at the left, and you get in Ostende. That's the problematic area is Bretagne, because there you have a fractal coast, and you keep on walking and after a while. You, 2 days later, you come at the same village, but at the other side of the...
Some more reactions?
Yeah, I could say that in my case, when I walk, I don't consider it as my... my walking is... I don't consider it as my artistic practice, so my preparation doesn't include so much the idea of sharing it with the public or including a public. So it allows me to take a bit more liberty with how I approach this. And so the minimum preparation I take is actually just knowing the area where I will go. And I have maybe an entry point and an exit point, but inside of these, I am free to decide day by day what I do. So this is something that I enjoy because then I can follow the landscape, what it tells me to, where it is the most inviting. I can follow my intuition on by where I see things that catch my eye, also on the map. And also it doesn't predetermine the rhythm I will take. I can also just decide to take a lazy day by a lake. I can, if it's sunny, I will probably like take it very easy and wake up late. So I take this freedom of not having a score, but I do write a score just like for the day itself or maybe for the next 2 days, and so yeah, I can follow a different kind of way of being in this environment. But of course it's quite different approach from the other people sitting at the table. So
I don't know, at the same time you also need to check the weather beforehand, or how am I feeling, checking in with your body. I think that's for everybody kind of,
Probably.
But indeed, public versus individual, that's a big, big difference.
Yeah, would we make a difference between wandering and walking? Because I think you are more in wandering, like being open to any situation and improvise with these factors, the new factors that you meet on your way, maybe, I don't know.
Well, it's not because your route is fixed that you're not wandering, I think, because you, for instance,
it's a question. It's a good question. It's really something
the walks
I ask.
Around the airports were completely free, and we were focusing on whatever we were encountering, but the route was fixed.
Yeah, because it is impossible not to have a fixed route in this kind of. You need to have a fixed route.
No, it would be possible. It would be possible, but I decided to fix it. To concentrate on other things, but you could also decide on the spot where to go and make a kind of a derive, even in a group, it's possible.
But you didn't need a certain permission or?
No, we were not walking like on the airport, we were walking around the airport,
but even
on public roads.
I don't have any idea because like in Iran, you are not even allowed to walk around, it's a kind of high security.
It's good to know space. When I want to do a walk around Tehran airport.
Don't do it.
Okay.
But then I have always this imagination that airport is very
walk around
secure,
them.
But even it is not.
Larger circles, I would say.
Exactly. A larger circle, indeed. Yeah.
That's why it is always extremely out of the city, like
yes, you
really
walk,
far.
You walk out of shooting range.
When you don't hear the plane, it's fine. You can
Okay, you can walk around the country, maybe.
Yes, exactly. Well, then you have to pass Afghanistan, Iraq. It's safer.
No, I also think that a score not necessarily limits the wandering aspect. Actually, not at all.
No. Isn't there this philosophical thing that it's in the limitation that comes the freedom?
Yeah, yeah,
definitely.
That's it.
Darwinistic.
Shall we move to the second question? Somebody has a sound, maybe? To Very good.
This.
That's a good combination.
How is this?
Maybe.
Maybe later.
I don't know what to play.
So we move to what happens during walking, which is also what happens during the walk. There might be a difference there. Maybe I mentioned some keywords that we thought could connect to this question. A walk, an object, a story, project. Walking, storytelling, thinking, practice, individual, collective, collecting, emptying, public space, landscapes, studio space, no defined spaces, or maybe undefined spaces. So, yes, I open it to the table.
Well, for me, the walking with the group always makes it something special because there is always a kind of a dynamic in a group. For Werner Lenz, I walk with a small group of people I choose. For something around, it was open to anybody who wanted to join. And I noticed that a walk can become very different depending on who you walk and their contributions, and people pay attention to different things. And this is nice, I think. So the story becomes different depending on with who you walk. Mm.
Do you ever take people on your walk?
Yeah, but then it's very casual. I don't.
Then it's, doesn't belong to your practice,
no.
Let's say. And that's a,
it's tourism.
That's a very conscious decision too.
Or it's just because the my artistic practice is relating to walking, but it's not taking as a starting point a walk, but it's more like the abstraction that I can extract from my different experiences with walking.
Mm-hmm.
So
it is important to experience this alone?
Yeah, in my case, this is what I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Also, because I find that when I'm on my own, I have more room to be surprised by things that I have not planned, and then take the time to acknowledge and recognize this unexpected event, and basically to stop, actually, because I really like to stop at moments that were not decided to stop, or to it can be to look at something, it can be to just sit or touch something, and these are things that I cannot anticipate, and then I cannot prepare an audience to this, because for me it only makes sense, it only works if it's unprepared and if it's a surprise. Because if I would say, okay, during this walk we will touch the stones at this place, then I lose the essence of what I'm looking for. What I'm more interested is if I go by and then all of a sudden I feel an urge to do something. It can be to touch a stone, to lie on dead leaves, or to swim in the lake. This has the value of being offered to me by the landscape, by where I am, and not being anticipated by what I want to feel, what I want to experience. So for me, this is what I'm interested in mostly when I am walking, is the surprises, what takes me by surprise that I hadn't planned theoretically in my mind beforehand. Mm-hmm. So I try to be sensitive to that, to see what comes, what arrives that I couldn't prepare in advance. So it's also hard to tell the nature of the surprises, because the more I speak about them, the next surprise would of course belong to a different realm of what I have been defining before. So it's just surprises.
Same for you, or?
Sometimes I think the work, because normally I ask another artist to do together the work or a group, and what is in common is always this intimate situation or feelings. I remember I did a work with a group of artists in Italy on the beach, and it was we started to work from midnight to 5 in the morning. And then the rules was not to talk and not to wear shoes, walking in silence. And I remembered it was extremely intimate. Even we were not talking, but we were so connected. It's always a way how to connect to each other, and also to the environment, to a space or the place you are walking. And that is always very interesting for me.
Do you need sound?
I didn't answer.
No, you can answer.
I thought I was reading my topic.
To the next chapter already?
No,
I just
wanted to have a little sound.
Ah, okay. Sometimes somebody can also be very present in absence. Werner Herzog, so one of the starting points from my Werner Lenz walk, in his Vom Gehen im Eis, he walks to Paris to meet his friend who is ill, and actually this whole trip he's alone, but he thinks a lot about her, and actually he does the walk for her, so she's very present. And this had a kind of a mirroring situation when we went on the Werner Lenz walk 2 years ago, when Oracle joined, which is a trio, and one of the trio was ill, she was terminally ill and she couldn't join. But the two of the trio who joined did a few what they call oracle sessions. They were, it's kind of a, I'm not going to explain it, but it's kind of a
vocal
singing,
practice.
Body vocal, yeah, thank you. And so it was dedicated to her. So actually, she was not there, but she was very much present. And this also can be part of the story of the walk and be part of the imagination or the atmosphere, I would say, of the walk.
Mm.
One of the chapters of the Camino Road, number 39, is from Boulogne-sur-Mer to Dunkirk. It has a special statute. It's been done already 50 times. It's a little bit like the chicken or the egg, because the chapter is called Boucalet, and it was already conceptually there before, and practically before the Camino Road. And it functions a little bit like a spreadsheet. It's like traveling through, walking through a spreadsheet from one container to the other. Every container has a little story attached to it. For example, you have the coffee bar where you take your coffee, you buy always the same postcard. There's a little narrative that you have to go through. You'd make the same joke to the person, etc. And then you go you go on from one, and there's like one walk has one chapter has maybe 250 containers, so it's a really like a heavy workload in a way. But some of them, we invite two artists. The rule is they cannot know each other. We invite them to join in the walk. And we add a team to it. And for example, one of the teams was the married couple. They were dressed in a wedding dress and as a groom. Various played photographer and etc. Another one was they were followed by a camera crew that were filming everything from far, with a big lens. And at the end of the walk, they were presented with all the pictures of themselves. And there was a lot of crying going on and shouting at that moment, but they didn't want to sign the paper to release the picture. So till now. But this is a kind of like a walk, a version where we impregnate others with the project, where we really, and they have a name. They have Esk 1 and Esk 2. What comes from escargot? You can imagine why. Because it's like I said, it's a workload. It's a program. It's quite. The program, because the first walk was simple, from A to B. After 50 walks, everything that happens, it's cumulative. Huh? It has to be, gets into the narrative. For example, one of the persons had bad shoes, they had to go back to the city, but you had to take the bus, go back to the city, buy new shoes, and then add another day to the walk. And this is always repeated over and over now in the next versions. Not the shoes, but the going back with the bus to the shop.
And then the story is created during the walk, you would say?
It's added. It's painted over and over again. The story was very simple in the beginning, but and also by external input, because if there is another person, hotel owner, who barges in the door at midnight or something, this also has to happen again.
Would you say that walking is storytelling then?
It's the blank paper where the storytelling is written on, yes.
But for me, storytelling, yes, it depends on what you mean with a story. Because it's not a classical story with an adventure and a plot, in case the walks I'm doing, but it creates something, yes, and
I think story more as a narrative.
And for me, the decor is taking over, like the landscape is the main story, and then I talked about this presence in absence, and I think actually what I try to do with Werner Lenz is to I try to create a kind of a spirit, a Werner Lenz spirit, who is derived from the two book fragments I start from, and then all the people who join the walk add to this ghostly presence, and it becomes a kind of an atmosphere that is not very well defined, but that comes out of all those different stories of the same walk, and it becomes a person who is not there physically, but who's present, and the whole walk is done in the spirit of this person. And this person will continue to evolve, I hope, depending on with who I will do the next editions of the walk. This ghostly person, personage of Werner Lenz, yeah.
Is it for you, storytelling?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I can go into the details of a performance I made that was called Revenir, where I am actually sat in a kind of living room environment with my audience, so it's also limited to maximum 10 or 12 people. And what I am telling is the notes I wrote during my my walk, that every day, every evening, I have the practice of walking, of writing my my day, and also writing down my thoughts and how I've been perceiving what I've been doing, and so all of it I write very fresh in the evening, and then I speak it in the exact same words to the audience live. So it recreates this kind of freshness of speaking about the experience at the present time. And what I find is interesting is that by this medium, I kind of highlight the way narration is the tool I use to make sense of what I'm doing during the day. And it's a tool I use to also help me make decisions about where to go, when to stop, where to continue. Because everything has to make sense at the level of the narrative, at the level of the dramaturgy, or at the level of, I don't know, at the literature level of what I am doing. And then by doing so, I kind of expose that and reveal how the two are are intimately linked, and how one cannot exist without the other, that the text cannot exist without the walk, but the walk also needs the text, needs the narrative to make sense, to be understood and to be shared. So yeah, I find it interesting that that the narrative, although is not prepared in advance, is existing, is taking place as I go.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I don't know, because the narrative or storytelling is something new in my work. Is before that I was not really focusing on it, and but the thing is, when I do the walking, like the real physical walk, I don't really think of a story, not beforehand or not during. But sometimes the walk can be imaginary, like.
Mm-hmm.
Like happened just in your head, and then that is a story there, because then I start like to do the work and to tell the story. That happened a lot, and then when I think it comes also from my childhood, that I also did that, like to have the imaginary work and the story to do together. But but when it is the work as an art piece and it is like a physical act, normally the story is, yeah, it's happened after, maybe, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like just to tell what I did, or try to describe the moment. If I consider that as a story, like to describe the moment or things
mm-hmm.
happen around the activity, or even the smell, or the weather, or people around.
So you're continuously recording then, also.
I mean,
in your head, or
maybe a story as a recording. But that the story can becomes a kind of tool to say what happened, to describe the work, maybe.
And if you bring somebody else along.
Yeah, because you mean. Like a collaboration to do the work together. It's always that after we start to talk about our experience, and then it's like, of course, two stories, because it's two different sometimes
views and perspectives,
yeah,
more layered.
Yeah. But I remember I did some walking performance in Luxembourg Plain. It was many years ago when the George Bush was selected as a president, and it was a huge demonstration. And I was doing a performance, walking performance between the demonstration. And it was very funny because we became part of them. But in our work, they become part of us. So it was very funny layering the situation. And it was by chance, because I didn't know Brussels well, and I just by chance went there. And
the
I didn't know.
Became political.
Yeah, I didn't know, and it happened by chance. And I always like this kind of things happen in the work by chance, and everybody has this. And that's why I guess the work is so valuable, because you always get things.
It's the surprising element you were discussing before,
yeah.
I think. Yeah.
So.
Maybe inherent or inherent to the to the worker.
Yeah.
There's also the weather, which can be a surprising element in it, which is something you can't control. Because you can look at the weather forecast beforehand, but it's not always that accurate. And also when they predict showers, you don't know exactly when the showers will. You have the radar now, but still it keeps on being unpredictable. And I think that's nice. It's something you can't control. And especially if you plan the walk like months beforehand and you decide, okay, we will do the walk then, you don't know what the weather will be. And I like this. This kind of unpredictability. It's actually what you don't have in a theater. There is no weather. You can plan everything if you want. You don't have to, but you can. And outside, there is always this unpredictability, and that's what makes it nice. I remember one walk, the walk around the airport of Birmingham. There actually BBC predicted dry weather. But at the beginning of the walk, we were passing a field, and the cows were hiding under the trees, and one of the participants said, "We're gonna have rain," and I said, "Yeah, but BBC said it would be dry." But he was right. So a bit later, it started raining, and so we had to have lunch. And so we went to have lunch in the restaurant of a garden center, like selling plants, and this was actually a very nice experience. And probably if it was wouldn't have been raining, we wouldn't have come there. So yeah, it.
I think it's a nice idea that the weather is somehow a character always as part of walking
exactly.
outside in public
and
space.
An unpredictable one, especially in Belgium, it's different.
Yes.
It is
walking in Southern California. So.
It's amazing how fast you can get wet, completely wet
mm-hmm.
in the walk.
Yes.
We only had to cancel one walk, and that was not because of the rain, but because of a storm. Could not cross the hill. Impossible. It could not walk. We had to go back, get the car, go there.
Yeah, I had the same with my journey in Switzerland. I had, many, many kilometers down, but I must confess, there is about 200 meters that are not done, because it was impossible to cross the hill. It was during the winter.
Yeah.
And so I went to the fastest point I could, and the day after I went the opposite side to go as far as I could also, but there is something missing, and that disturbed me for a while. But we were speaking about storytelling, the narrative and so on, and in my case I wouldn't say there's a big story. It's really not what I'm looking for. It's more like fleeting thoughts, impressions, like a diaporama or slideshow of impressions. And of course, during my walks, things occur. There are things happening in unpredictable weather or incidents, I don't know. But these are really anecdotes for me. Or, no, I should say, it become anecdotic if I tell them. it's not what I'm looking for. So it's a kind of contradiction. But if we set rules, it's precisely to get these little surprises. But I notice also, if I tell these surprises, if I tell what happened, the little surprises, I already escape my subject. I distort my feeling by telling them, and so that's something I avoid to make.
While you walk, you mean, or
no, after.
After. Yeah,
if
okay.
I say, you know what happened today, and I tell these things, the way I'm telling that already transformed the feeling I had. So I try not to. I like to keep these feelings and these.
Yeah. But you are recording them.
Passively,
head,
yeah, of course, because I, yeah.
That's what it is
yeah.
about, yeah.
But yeah, so in a way, I'm looking for these little surprises, but I keep them for myself because I'm looking for something more. Objective is a dangerous word, but less subjective, I would say.
Makes me think of when
there are two layers, in fact, me as a working artist and me as me. And the two layers don't talk to each other.
Yeah. What you describe makes me think of when you have like a very strong and potent unpredicted event,
yeah.
like, I don't know, let's say an accident or a near accident. Sometimes in the middle of the event, you are absolutely not aware of all the levels of dangers or of all the levels of difficulties and things. So it's very chaotic when you're inside. And it's only when you go out, whether you're on your own or whether you are also with someone, that it's by telling what happened, by explaining how the event went, and although sometimes it feels like it's not exactly what you experience, but by the simple fact of telling it and of repeating it, it becomes the reality of what you have experienced. It becomes the only way this event can be...
The opposite. I would say by telling them you transform it already. So you are getting away from
exactly. You're getting away from it, but then by getting away from it, you also lose track of what the original event was, and then it becomes impossible to reaccess this because you have put this explanation between you and the event.
Yeah.
And sometimes the explanation is very surprising because if I have in my mind something where it was like a near accident and we were two, and by talking with each other we understood what exactly the level of risk was, and now it has become impossible to reaccess the feeling of being in this chaotic moment and not understanding what it was, because now we have explained it so many times to ourselves and to other people that this is the only reality left from the complex realities that were contained in the event. So this is what I find is interesting in how storytelling actually shapes your
the
reality you experienced.
So is storytelling then always with language?
I think so.
It depends on what you call storytelling again. But for me,
for me not necessarily.
For me not necessarily. But I was already talking about the afterwards, but it doesn't matter, no?
No, it doesn't matter.
Oh, sorry. Should we have made
a jingle? Yeah, make a jingle.
You can.
Somebody?
This one.
What happens after walking?
So for me, it doesn't need to be language or language alone. And a map can have a very strong imaginary power for me. And so I always try with my projects to go back. You have a before, and then you have the walk, and then you have an afterwards. And afterwards, try to go back to the same format as the before. So with circling around, I started from drawing a line on a map, and I created a map after the walk, collectively with the people, so kind of a new map. And with Werner Lenz, I started from two book fragments and I wrote a new text afterwards. So it starts from text and goes back to text, and it started from a map. But to answer to the question, so for me, the map can have the same imaginary power as the story. Of course, there's no narrative in it. But in a story, in my text, there is not necessarily a narrative either. It can also be an atmosphere or.
But I always find your map very narrative in a sense that, for example, when I look at it, I can make my own stories on it, like to make my
indeed.
Own. And that's I find it very valuable that. Because sometimes when you work with the language, you fix some imagination, or you give the guide, but this guide is different because I am very free to go where I want to go and imagine myself there in the map.
Yeah, the story is created in the heads of...
Yeah.
But wouldn't you say that a map is also a certain language?
Yes,
because there is, for me, when I say language, map or images or drawings also are containing that, because it also communicates information.
But then
from one point of view.
Of course, then it's always in a language, because communication happens in a language. So,
when it's communicated.
But it does need to be...
Words.
Words.
What's the official?
On the map, there are also words. But
right,
yeah.
The object.
Yeah, so then we come to the question how to translate walking or a walk to an audience, and what is important there, and capture the narrative somehow.
You spoke about Amish Fulton in the previous exchange, and it's interesting also the fact that he doesn't want to tell anything about this experience, just leave it, but afterwards it's just a line.
I find the similarity in my work also is interesting, but his approach is totally different, because after he makes big posters or objects, but it is kind of side effect of the work.
Yeah, it's just the
it
basic
interesting.
Track.
Yeah.
Basic track.
Yeah, and there is a piece in Caleb by him, and it's so many bronze footsteps where you have the whole walk. So one side he's very ephemeral, conceptual. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it depends. But
it's a bit of a contradiction.
He doesn't want, to talk about the experience, like how, what is the word? How he did, how it was during the walk, but what I said, like the side effect of the walk. But of course, he make a big object and make it things big, and maybe sometimes very direct to the walk itself, I don't know. But I was just, also I quote him because of our conversation, because you said also, something that it is impossible to translate. I don't know if I understand well that the experience of the work itself, because of course things happen that you really can't translate it, and it happened in the moment, and that is the art itself. It happened in the moment, and that is the tricky one. And then what are we going to do after that?
What I wanted to say, it can be, doesn't need to be. You can do things afterwards as well, but not.
Yeah.
You don't have to. I think indeed the walk can be the work as well. It depends on what you want to do.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But in my work, sometimes the work is so intimate, and that is really impossible to translate the intimate feelings. It's like even... Yeah, maybe just by telling that sometimes.
Exactly, but that is...
But to translate it to the object or even writing, or it's kind of impossible. And sometimes you just leave it. And you just... And if there is a situation, you just talk about it.
Yeah. And does it exist in your CV then, let's say? I did a walk then with that person.
No, not really.
Necessarily.
Because CV is a kind of political document to get grant, and to play with certain institution. It's kind of institutional things, but this kind of art piece, it doesn't fit in that play.
Though I see CV also as a historical document.
Yeah, you can play with this, I know, but if you want to ask a grant or job or something, then you have to fit in their rules. You can go against that.
But so you don't necessarily need it to give existence to things?
Yeah, I like to do that, but in a certain situation when I feel now is the moment, and by talking about
yeah,
that.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, in that sense.
And that sometimes happens. Sometimes when you talk about that, the talk becomes also a kind of intimate situation, like
a new one, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then it depends also, yeah.
Yeah.
And normally it happens with artists because they make sometimes the same directional work, like the walking performance. Yeah.
I like it sometimes how the memory filters your experience of the walk, so that it relates to what you said about the fact that once you put it into language, it becomes something different. But of course, also in our memory, it becomes something different. So there is always an afterwards. Like, so there is always a beforehand. You always imagine things. There's also always an afterwards because there's your memory, and you can work with it or not. But I find it interesting to work with. Apart from my projects for WAP, I also do walks and write about it. And I always start writing like months after I did the walk because immediately afterwards it's too fresh, and I like the filter of the memory. And for Werner Lenz, I did this as well, that I did interviews with the participants half a year after we did the walk, and then wrote a text, and I somehow tried to integrate the answers of this interview into the text I've written. And I like this filter of memory, especially like after half a year or 1 year, how you start talking about what you experienced.
So what are the things that have remained? What are the things that were lost? What are the things that you observed happening in that filtering?
Yeah, and I think somehow we cannot prevent from making a story, and I think making a story and filtering in your memory, it's a bit the same. And this takes over the real experience, of course. But also, if you do nothing with it, your memory takes over the real experience and becomes something different. And often when you talk with people, they sometimes have a very different experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like with the Werner Lenz, it struck me how people were so shocked about the weather we experienced there. And for me, I found it harsh as well, but I was probably less shocked by it. So it became the place it took in people that came with me was bigger than in my own head. So this was a different way of, and I think it became even bigger after some months, because it became something epic, and of course it was epic, but
heroic.
You see? Oh my God!
But it's true that the testimony of the people joining you became such a story.
The fact that it was epic is the only thing that.
Yeah,
it was the reality of then, although you didn't experience it as epic, but because you explained it so many times as epic, now it is epic.
Yeah, it's a kind of a resonance between the participants that makes it
more... Exactly. And did you observe also things that got lost?
Of course, but I mean, if it gets lost in my memory, I don't know where it is. it's like asking somebody, did you forget something?
Probably.
Okay. No, of course, yeah, talking with other people, you can maybe see that some people forgot about something and others not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know immediately an example, for sure. Yeah.
I also was thinking about your the exhibition that you presented last year in the Nodin space of Boucalet, and where the walking is really collecting, and heavy collecting, let's say.
I think they see the walk a little bit as a piece of salami. that is squeezed between two big slices of bread, the preparation and the post-production. But the post-production is like a big loaf of bread that where you collect everything and you rearrange the narrative. Keep on refining it also. So on the walk itself, it just happens and it's just your recollection, your memory that is rebuilding everything like in different shelves. This object with this object, okay, that gives another meaning to what happened. And yes, in this show there was kind of like everything to put together, but still very blurry.
But you showed a huge collection of objects.
No. Yeah, it was everything collected during the chapter 39.
Mm-hmm.
But also what I didn't tell is that I go there by car. I park a car. It's a very complex thing because I used to go by train, start at point A and end at B, and then with a full backpack and three bags of stuff. And that was getting too heavy because there's a lot of interesting stones there on the beach, and also fool's gold, and it's all heavy. So we go with the car, we put the car in Calais, we first go to Boulogne, then we walk the first day, then we pick up the car, we pack it, we bring back the car at night, and then we go back and do the another. It's a kind of like play with zigzagging between the thing, but always doing the walk, never doing any part with the car. It's very a big organization in a way. So, but that makes it possible to collect even more. It's kind of like a hoarding trip, because the whole Camino world is also the opposite of purifying. So it's kind of soiling itself with, it's a capitalist. That's why I have the pig. It's a capitalist walk. It's amassing wealth. So, and because chapter 39 is very close to Ostend, I thought a little bit of this piece that Robert Long? Richard Long, how he did his walks. There was a truck coming behind him, and he was just pointing at a stone and another one, and then some assistants came and loaded up the stone to do it in a museum. So for somebody like so conceptual walker, if you see the big picture, it's kind of like, okay, it's capitalist artwork, art world at work. So that's what we try to reflect a little bit in this
in the exhibition,
this walk, and also in the exhibition
where the series of collections were presented. But I remember it was there was a big work on how do we go about this presentation. You have the boxes of all the tools, but you can also take them out, one collection, and show those.
Yes, well, that's how you tell the little parts, the little stories apart also.
So the object becomes the carrier of the story that happened.
Yeah, I wanted to say that.
Yeah.
Because I remember it was, for me, it was like a lot of stories there.
Yeah, and also they're also connected to others. For example, there's one story about there was a woman, probably dead now because I can't find her anymore. She was painting on stones she found to make a cookie, painting of a petit beurre. It's a very specific French cookie from Nantes, and they had a square shape. And every time I pass there, I buy one. So I have a collection of 42, because then she stopped somewhere. And out of that, I asked her, for example, because there's another story that's called Love, the Egg. Enough is not enough, an egg is not enough. And I asked her to paint an egg, to camouflage it as a stone, as a pebble. So to hide the pebble on the track, the egg, so some passerby, after we were gone, would step in and said, shit, enough, merde, enough, instead of like, so one story provokes another one that is connected to it. And,
I think it's nice that it jumps from the presentation or translation to a public and then back to the walk, and that, of course, if you take the time I think time is an important aspect that you redo certain.
There was also a collection on the road. For example, there was a kid's drawing of a Greek face, and they decided to make it permanent. It was made in chalk, so now this drawing is there permanent with paint, and is repainted every year, so it will stay forever. If this kid in 40 years comes by and says, "Oh, what does this provoke as a connection or as a reflection to the public?" So you play with this.
Yeah. Do people experience sometimes difficulties in this translation process to the public? The walk being so close and intimate and then making this connection with the public, what is difficult there?
I think it's because the limits of the medium you use. If it's, in my case, if it's like theater or performance or text, or spoken text, or other mediums, or photos, of course it's very limited, so you have to acknowledge the limitations you have. Maybe you push it further to try to convey something more than you can. And in my case, what I always try to say is to point out, to make the limitation visible, so that by making the limitation visible, the frame visible, it's easier for an audience to also imagine what's outside of the frame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And can you give an example of?
I could.
I'm thinking of the application.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the application as well. I'm not really ready yet to go into details about it because it's not set yet, and I haven't tried it yet on many audience members. But even just with spoken text, the fact that you say this is text that I wrote and that is, or that it is text that has nothing to do with, I don't know, the fact that you point out that this is a story can help understand what is beyond the story. Or if you take a picture and because the way you take it, you make very visible the fact that it's, that it's just like a small square of a landscape, that it has a frame, that it's cutting out a lot of the rest. If this becomes conspicuous and readable by an audience, then the audience can start drawing in its imagination what is beyond the square. Mm. So I cannot be more specific now with words.
Nice, we're looking forward.
It's also a little bit easier with a conceptual walk to present it to the public, and you can write it down as a formula sometimes in one sentence or anything.
Yes.
But with more organic walks, it becomes more complex. Yeah. The whole contamination of the walk or the wandering is so complex in some things that you cannot easily
translate
it. Yeah. Or word it.
Yeah, I think
it's something else that you create afterwards. I see it like that. It's the walk is one thing, and what comes afterwards is another, because you shouldn't be too ambitious in wanting to represent the walk. What I struggled with both of my projects actually is to create something collectively, or to at least have not doing things alone, because we walked with more people. With the Werner Lenz project, I did those interviews. In the end, actually, I think the text is basically my text, and there are only small influences, but still, they are there. With Circling Around, it took me some time to develop a process, because there people were not necessarily artists that participated, and so I couldn't, and still I wanted to create something together, and preferably a map, because I started from a map. So there I created really a process to create something together, where whatever kind of people joined could participate. And I also wanted to make something very open. So yeah, story, but a map can be a story, but it's a very open thing where there's no storyline. You people who watch the map can imagine something very freely, actually, and which is something I like. This is in contrast to a written text where you much more direct the imagination of the reader or listener. And so what we did was we gathered together after the walk, and I asked people to write titles to pictures. So everybody takes pictures with the phone and blah, blah, blah nowadays. And so we gathered the pictures together, and I asked them to write titles to those pictures. They could pick whatever pictures they wanted and write whatever they wanted. It was really completely free. And so this is something, and they could interact, like say, ah, what are you doing? It was a group thing. And then afterwards, I gathered all those pictures with titles, and I took away the pictures, and I put only the titles on the map where the picture was taken, on the place where the picture was taken. And so there, I saw this, like, these are new place names, actually, based on our experience. But because people gave the title to the picture, sometimes when you took the picture away, it became very mysterious. Sometimes it was very clear, but sometimes it became very, and this is what I liked, actually. And this triggers the imagination. And so it's the same with place names on the map. Sometimes there is a mysterious thing about it. Sometimes it's very clear. If you say Ogmore by sea, you will know it's by the sea. But other place names, you can imagine something, but it's not really telling something. So this is what I like. And this was a way to create something collectively. But it took me a few editions to shape this, actually. And in the beginning, I was struggling with that. And I think with Werner Lenz again, there the participants also do things during the walk, but how to, they're not necessarily writers, I don't want to write a text together, how to incorporate their parts into something, this is something maybe that still has to evolve.
So giving a voice to the people participating in
the
work afterwards that represents somehow.
Because otherwise, I'm used to writing texts about what I experience. So this is something that I'm used to. But that's when you do this collectively, and that's a difficult thing.
Yeah, I think I've got the same. But until now, I was busy with my own. I was walking alone, and so the difficulty was actually to emphasize the inner experience, that of a viewer, of a thinker, and not that the achievement of a sportive achievement, not a performance. It's not walking is for me not a physical performance,
okay.
And so not to focus on that is something quite tricky when you want to transpose your experience. And that's why also I always try to put some views coming from above, really like the map and not elevations. And I can come back to Hamish Fulton. That's something really problematic in his work. He's always, very often insisting on relief, and that makes
physicality.
It really insists on this point, and so that's for me quite problematic. And we were Bruno was speaking about how to make the transcription of a collective thing. In some weeks, I will try to organize a group exhibition by walking together from the fields to the city, and we will gather artworks on our way by stopping at several places to take an art piece from an artist living in the area. And so it will be quite a fresh event, really spontaneous, and I will also ask the participant to invite things, to make some sound, a lecture on our way. And there I think also the transposition will be totally different. Will I insist on the map? Probably, but also I will try to find another system to present the participant the remembering of
yeah.
the participants, and so that's also the same kind of questions. And
yeah.
I found very nice the way that you invited people to title pictures that they haven't made themselves. But it's a nice connection.
Yeah, it's a protocol afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes you need this protocol to
make a step further.
Yeah.
To look from outside.
And also to allow everybody to participate. It's easier to if you have such a protocol to participate for everybody, than. Okay, you ask something to do and you do it. It's much more difficult to ask somebody to write a text about it. Or
it has a playful dimension, so it's very inviting.
Yeah.
More difficulties experienced with. Maybe this leads to a final question also of how now we experience difficulty to
not
even,
to walk.
Even to
show
walk
is quite
the
easy.
Walking indeed. Does somebody want to share something about the current situation, how this influences exhibiting or going to an audience or not? Or
it's terrible. Not to be able to walk. Not to be able to. Well, you can.
You can walk. We can't cross borders.
But can cross borders. Yeah.
There's a limit.
Do some conceptual work, but not structural. I miss it because it's kind of like it replaces the visit to the psychiatrist. We do it every 4 or 5 months. We don't need anything else. It, long walk, I mean, a walk of a few days. It really helps in many ways.
It's very soothing.
Hmm?
It can be very soothing.
Yes, yes, yes. Even the capitalist walk is, in a way, it's yeah.
Accumulate stones.
You were speaking about you made a comparison once between the studio and landscape. Also, you spoke about that, and I find this quite interesting. Also, I made a dossier for a residence, and my statement was every day I will find in the landscape a new studio, but. Is it a studio, or is your studio still home after walk? What is your studio exactly? When you walk every day, it's quite hard to define. Is the work done when you walk, or when it's transcripted? At which moment it becomes a work? So that's so
but yeah, that's interesting because. For me, a studio is a space that you will start to think and shape your idea, and then sometimes the walking is really a studio for me, but sometimes you need a table to sit or to make a drawing, or then you can walk and do this thing, of course, and that is interesting, like to mix these borders.
That's my biggest problematic. You know, I'm unable to concentrate myself in front of a table with some sound, with so I need to walk, and then my ideas come. I feel really free. I go really deep into things, and then I said, I will write it later on.
Yes.
And then you come back, you have some keywords, but the main thing is gone. Mm-hmm. Then you next day you go with your notes, able to take some notes on your way, but just by taking the pencil and the paper, it's already you need this kind of
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like when you break an egg in a
mm-hmm.
to make some preparation. There's some pieces of the eggs, these solid pieces that stays, and you try to catch them. And when you catch, they go away. And then you take your finger back, and it comes back also and say, ah. And it's like this. And an idea is like when you try to note it, it's gone. But
oh,
when
yeah.
you walk, it's...
It's
yeah.
a bit like
that,
the studio is a place where you create. So where do you create? On the walk or
yeah,
back?
I don't know.
I
For
think
me,
when
yeah.
you're back, it's post-production. It's just the varnish, the framing and the thing. That's not the studio.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of like the workshop of the of the finisher.
To realize.
But the studio is where you create. That's in the walk.
But it depends on the practice, because sometimes my practice is you have the idea, the concept, but then you create it in an exhibition or a space or the place that should happen. But then I don't consider that as a studio. But yeah, sometimes my bed is my studio
mm-hmm.
because I just sit in the bed and write
yeah.
and that is. But this thing what you said, it happened to me also, like, because now I have a lack of time the whole time, and then and the moment I pick up my child to come home, it's like almost 1 hour walking, and I choose to walk.
Mm.
And that is the moment I start also to think of when I have an idea. And then what you said, and when I want to write it down, it sounds ridiculous. It's like, oh no, that is not what I was thinking 1 hour about. A friend told me the good thing is to record your voice when you are...
Maybe.
But it didn't work with me.
Or not push on the button. You just start recording when you leave. And so...
Yeah, but I did, and it was more ridiculous
and
because I was listening to my voice and it's horrible. And then the horrible idea. But then I thought maybe the problem is the idea itself. Maybe it is not still... I didn't rape enough, or it's not good enough. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But
because
yeah.
sometimes you have suddenly
like
something, and it is perfect.
It's like writing a love letter during the night, and then
exactly.
when you read it in the morning, it's awful.
Yeah. yeah.
Or trying to write down dreams, it's
yeah.
It's awesome.
Actually, Rousseau in his Confession, he has a very beautiful part exactly about this, about all the ideas he has during walking. And all the but then afterwards it's like a dream. It's like
mm-hmm.
I was interested in trying to capture this inner monologue that I have when I'm hiking or walking, which is it's like it's not really language. It's words, but it's not really grammatical. It's a bit like a mess of it's a soup of concepts of words of sentences. And I was imagining that I wanted to capture that, and then I thought, okay, maybe I will try to vocalize and record it, but of course actually just the fact of turning on the mic was disturbing the experience so much that I was totally unable to have this natural inner monologue. So I think it's, if I'm interested in that, I was trying to then write down things in the evening and then to process it afterwards, and I found that this was actually more it was actually closer to the feeling I have of this inner monologue than trying to, in the moment, capture it with another kind of tool. So sometimes the studio work allows you to be closer to what you want to capture or to want to reproduce than bringing, I don't know, a camera or something on board with you and moving the studio inside with you in your backpack.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also very different if your voice is out loud
exactly.
in the landscape. I mean, then you are busy with yourself
yeah.
instead
mm-hmm.
of thinking and open to.
But is the thinking related to the walking or to the landscape? Or
not necessarily.
It can be everything.
I think it's related to the
passing.
It can
be this and can be... I sometimes see my life suddenly very clearly during walking. Or the world or the landscape or what it can be.
Who am I?
Yeah, because
finally.
We do this practice on the treadmill every day half an hour. And I must say in half an hour there's a lot of thought going through. And then the thing happens that after you put down the treadmill and then you run upstairs to write it down. And in this space of time, so much got lost already. But still it's a practice.
And that's interesting in walking. You are aware of what happens, but in the same time, you might really be drifting in your head. That's getting lost in two different...
What happens with me is that when I take a day walk, because it's a bit longer than half an hour, I have my thoughts come back a few times through the day on the same thoughts. And if they have come back, I don't know, 3-4 times, I'm able in the evening to write them down.
Yeah.
But if they haven't come back, it's really, really hard to try to reimagine how, what was the thread to that led me to an idea that just came once.
Another path.
Or to redo the path. Yeah. Well, I think it's going to be different, but in this case, I find that the fact that it's repeating is what makes it more and more graspable. And only a few ID repeats in a day, I don't know. It's,
It's day by day. If you walk every day, it's like, this ID I
had it a couple of days.
So
yeah.
It must be really...
Exactly.
But then you stop walking and it's gone again.
We used to have a solution for
that. I walk in the atelier.
We used to have a solution for that when we did the wood walks in 20 years ago. And we walked with a chalk. And then every time we had an ID, we wrote it on a tree and we took a photograph of the tree.
And cut the tree and bring it
back.
No,
leave it. But that was a way to kind of like, but even most of them, you have these words that are on a tree and you say, what? No. Okay.
Freedom. Is it a bit naive?
Yeah.
Yeah, I take notes, but often afterwards I read them again and I start.
But is it for everybody then, a studio space, the walking?
It can, it's also that, yes.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think we all should walk with an assistant. And just talk out loud and then, yes,
sir.
Yeah. Or a robot. They will make robots like that to carry the bags.
Actually,
and everything, and then even like note them.
No, or really a social writer who would write it nicely. I would say that is.
Maybe it can also be a project to walk with one other person who's public, and to all the time during the whole walk, say what you think.
I thought about that, about saying
it very
loud.
Then the walker is also the performer.
I think it's impossible to say what you're thinking.
You have to reword it, it's already...
It's an exercise.
It's two different speeds,
Even though thoughts are also in words, but still...
Breathe in, breathe out. Step further.
Right.
Mind is root.
There was one beautiful question that still came up on Monday, which was, when does the walking end? Which is maybe a nice question too.
I think it was, when does the walk end? No?
Yeah, the walking ends when you're no longer...
there's only one walk. There's only one. And that's the real curriculum vitae. It's the... It's a map, in fact.
Yeah. Because you always go back to your walk.
You see, also the butterfly effect is an important the chaos theory. In the sense, if you see the past, I saw this passing on Instagram, and you have this delta drawing of all the possible roads that you can take. If you look at the past, you have one track that you did. But if you look at the future, you still have all these possibilities. This is this. So it doesn't end, but you don't know where it will end.
But life ends.
Yeah. But it is a kind of on and off situation, like the focus is gone and then it's back again, no? It's normally it's like this. But also it depends on practice, because if it is project based, then it's different. But if it is organic work or the way you are working, it's a repetition, it's never end. In a sense of one work.
Yes, if you have a score and the score is finished.
I once tried to calculate if you would start walking when you're born, and you walk in a spiral around the Earth from the North Pole, and you go each time, like, let's say 5 kilometers, mm-hmm. I think I thought, 5 kilometers down in your spiral, how much time it would take to reach the South Pole. Mm-hmm. And my first calculation, but it was in an evening in a bar, and I had already I was drinking some heavy beers, but this calculation, it came out that it was 70 something years, and I thought, like,
it's a lifetime.
And then there I started really to believe in God, and because I mean, the Earth and our lifetime are in harmony.
Oh my God. No, that's okay. That's for 5 kilometers. Yeah. That would not work if they 10.
Yeah, but still five. It's, I thought, like, that. Yeah, whatever. But then the next morning, I redid the calculation, and I saw that it's many lives. I was completely wrong. It's much, much more than one lifetime. I don't know where I made a mistake.
With Miss Westmalle.
Maybe. So that was my final conclusion. God lives in the Westmalle.
He does. She does. They do.
That's where the
You could take a potato peeler with you and peel the earth while you're at it.
Yeah. So, but maybe we should calculate how many generations if you give the potato peeler to your sons and daughters.
I'm gonna check on the pad if there's questions came.
How many phone calls we had today?
No, yet.
Strange. And on the answering machine.
Did anybody of you try to walk backwards for
like
physically backwards?
I know.
Moonwalk.
Yeah? Like, yeah, moonwalk, yeah. No?
I did for 1 month for my job. I mean, from Leuven station to where I work. And I did backwards, and each time I made a drawing like a map. But just lines. Mm-hmm. And during 30 days, I did. And I also calculated the time.
But somebody was with you to warn you when you...
No. But, you know, the work is like is easy work. I mean, the line is next to the canal, and it's like one long line. But then crossing the street was... I had to wait for the red light to become green, and then it was safe. But I was very slowly, like, that's...
And what about the neighborhood?
Oh, she's there again, look!
This crazy woman is coming.
There is this story about an American walker, more than 100 years ago, the Letterman. And he walked a circle of like 34 days in the neighborhood of New York. And they even made a postcard to commemorate the day that he would pass in this neighborhood. He said, this day of the month, he passes there. And there's postcards that they were hanging around of the Letterman. He did this for 50 years, walking in like a nomad, always.
Nah.
Yeah.
There was also this man in the US who was walking and never stopped walking for against atomic weapons who it was still in the time of the Cold War, but then he died because a car ran over him.
No, it's CIA probably.
And did you experience the public looking weirdly at you? I mean, you and the people.
Yeah, of course, it is always some weird reaction. Yeah. But not something very special.
Yeah.
But I think this kind of action in public space, it's always like they think of you like a weird one or like, it's an art piece or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think now in Europe is something normal. Maybe if I did it 20 years ago, it was maybe, I don't know, unusual.
Yeah, for instance, the slow walking process that you made.
Mm-hmm.
So many artists did it exactly at the same
yes,
time,
yeah.
But really, not copying themselves. Anne-Thérèse Kersmacher, for dancers, she made it. Alain Platel did it as an exercise also with his dancers. There was somebody else, a filmmaker, an Asiatic filmmaker, who did many.
Mm-hmm.
And
but also
once,
Stanley Brown as a visual artist.
Yeah, so. But it comes back also.
Maybe this will be a consequence of this time where everybody is walking again.
Yeah.
But I find it because in art history, like the following piece of Akonchi, it happened a lot. And some people, they don't even know that Akonchi did it. And maybe before Akonchi, someone else did it.
Yeah, and no problem.
But the funny thing is the focus is always different because
it's
so conceptual, the work. Like, Akonchi, the following piece, it was about public and private space. But I remember I had a conversation with an artist, he did it like a couple of years ago, and he didn't have any clue about public and private space. He was just following people. But maybe, I don't know which reason, but different reason.
Yeah.
And I found it very interesting that this gesture made it very universal.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can have different intention and focus.
Yeah, but it says a lot about our time also.
Yes.
About the fact we are all running.
Yeah, the narration is always.
Yeah, so there is a big need
part
for
of the context.
Slowness.
Yeah, exactly.
For example, yeah.
I think we might have come to the end of this conversation. Are there some final remarks?
Keep on walking.
You'll never walk alone.
Play the song again.
Yeah, play the song again. Someone coming for us.
So this is You'll Never Walk Alone, played by Nina Simone.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
All of them. Doesn't matter where. You put it in. And we will not talk about
Thank you very much, everybody.
I understand where it's
goodbye, Mike.
Why there's no wandering arts department at the academy. Too much suicide.